James chapter 5, verses 1 through 6 is the text we'll be considering. Hopefully I remember how to do this. It's been a few weeks. I want to thank again Pastor Seth, my brother Phil, Russell, who have been preaching for me over the past few weeks. It gave me a nice little reprieve of that element of ministry so that I could officially finish all my coursework for my MDiv. And I'm done with it. It's very good. I'm blessed. So, woo! It's not all done. I'll probably walk next May, and I'm going to spend some time over the next 9 months or so with a couple of different pastors, fulfilling my internship requirement, which is not really an internship. It's kind of hard for a lead pastor to intern somewhere else, but they will serve as mentors to me and encouragements to me. So Pastor Robert Elliott of Riverside Reformed Baptist Church, I'm going to be meeting with him regularly. And then after that, Pastor Guy Boyer from here in town. Some of you know him. I look forward to that very much. But again, just thank you to those men for preaching, and I'm very glad to be beyond that and look forward to directing my efforts elsewhere in the months to come. James chapter 5, verse 1 through 6 is a text that reminds us that the way we spend our money matters. The way we use the resources that God has given to us matters. In other words, money is a deeply spiritual thing, isn't it? The spiritual things aren't just dealt with here on Sundays, but rather the whole of life pertains to our spiritual walk with the Lord. Would you hear now the reading of God's holy word in James 5, starting in verse 1? "Come now, James says, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat up your flesh like fire. You have laid up treasure in the last days. Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you, and the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You have lived on the earth in luxury and in self-indulgence. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the righteous person. He does not resist you." So far, the reading of God's holy word. This portion of James is really quite unique. I don't know if you've picked up on that, but it's unique in that it addresses not Christians, not the righteous, not the church, but rather the unrighteous, the wicked, the unholy. Did you see that here? James and verse 1 says, "Come now." It's this summons. "Listen up, you rich." And so he's addressing not the congregation, but the rich of the world. And as we see from the rest of the text that we're considering this morning, he's not just talking to the rich in general, but the unrighteous, unholy rich who have hoarded wealth and who have oppressed the poor. So James, in a unique sort of way, is now directing his attention away from the church, away from the Christian, to the unrighteous and the ungodly. And we might ask ourselves the question, why would you do that, James? The rest of the letter is addressed to Christians. Why would you now address non-Christians, the wicked? Why don't you write another letter to them, James, and deal with them in another way? Why bother us with this information in a letter otherwise addressed to us, you see? If we were to kind of imagine James speaking the contents of this letter to an audience instead of writing it, it might be like this. James goes on in chapter 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 talking to Christians. And then in chapter 5, he turns his attention to someone else, to a group beyond the Christians, and he says to them, "Come now, you rich, weep and wail for the miseries that are coming upon you." Why would he do this in this letter except for the fact that he wants us to hear the words that he has to say to the unrighteous rich? I think it's a fascinating little technique that James uses literarily. He addresses another audience in this letter because he wants us as Christians to hear the message that he's preaching to the unrighteous rich of the world. Our understanding of this text, our right interpretation of it, and our right application of it really depends upon us understanding this fact that James chapter 5, verses 1 through 6, applies to you and to me. It's for us. Though we might not be rich, and though I certainly hope we are not the unrighteous rich, this text is still for us. We need to hear what James has to say to these people. It's to be applied by us. Imagine being in a courtroom for a moment. If you're in a courtroom, in the court of law, there are a lot of people present, aren't there? There's a judge, there's a defendant, someone who is on trial, but they are not the only ones in the room, right? Instead, you have also witnesses and a jury, prosecutors. You also have just people who are interested in the case. They're all sitting in the courtroom. The case has primarily to do with the judge and the defendant, doesn't it? Those are the two who are most invested in what is going on there. But there are many others who are watching and who are observing what is going on. And when the verdict is read, if it is a guilty verdict, it is read to the defendant, isn't it? You are guilty and here is your sentence. But it is read in the presence of all, so that all might learn from the verdict, you see. In that moment, the defendant is obviously most impacted by the reading of that verdict. His life is directly impacted. But at the same time, others are looking in upon the whole situation and they're learning from the verdict as well. They're learning that, you know what, I should not go the way of the guilty. I should not commit the same crime or the same sin. Look at the punishment that he has received. I will not go that way, you see. And so they are learning as they look in. And also, those who have been wronged are also comforted by the verdict, aren't they? They have been wronged, they have been sinned against, if you will, and now justice has been vetted out upon the guilty party, and they are comforted by that justice. The exact same thing is happening here in James 5, 1 through 6. Another audience is being addressed, but we are like the witnesses in a courtroom, looking in upon the judgment that James is pronouncing upon the unrighteous rich, and we are to learn from that, aren't we? We're to think to ourselves, huh, I had better not go the way of the unrighteous rich. And I had better not envy the unrighteous rich. It's not worth envying what they have or the kind of life that they live. And also, we are comforted if we are among the oppressed that God Himself will one day judge the unrighteous rich and make all things right and true. And so we can learn, church, a number of things from the passage that we're considering this morning. First of all, it is through James's rebuke of the unrighteous rich that we are reminded that we should have nothing to do with unjust people, systems, or schemes. In other words, we are reminded that there should not be an ounce of injustice in us. We ought to never oppress anyone else or have anything to do with those who do oppress others, the weak, the gullible, the poor. And so James addresses the rich in this text in a very powerful way, and he condemns them here in verse 1. And this condemnation of the unrighteous rich is very sobering, isn't it? Listen to what James says to them. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. So you have to picture this. Here are rich men, rich women living in James's day. They were undoubtedly wealthy landowners who were trying to squeeze every ounce of profit that they could out of their fields. And they had made a practice of withholding pay from the poor workers that were working in the fields for them. Perhaps they would not pay at all. Perhaps they would give less than what they had promised. They were taking advantage of the poor. The poor could do nothing about it. The authorities were either unwilling or unable to bring these rich to justice. And so here, these men and women were guilty of oppression, and they were living lives of luxury. And James cries out to them and says, it's time for you to start weeping and howling. Weep now. Howl now. Why? Because miseries are coming upon you. You are living in luxury now. You are living in your mansions, dressed in fine clothing, enjoying nice food and nice drink, and you're enjoying all of that. And the workers that you are oppressing can hear your laughter. They can hear your parties from down the road. But listen, James says to them, and he uses a prophetic voice to do so. It really should remind us of the voice of the prophets of old, Isaiah and Jeremiah. He says, it's time for you to start weeping and howling because miseries are on the way. James is obviously referring to the final judgment. James is reminding these rich that though you might thrive now and enjoy the luxuries of life now, there is a judgment day that is coming, and you will give an account for all of the oppression that you have vetted out. Verse 2, your riches have rotted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. And so James reminds the rich that their riches are really a futile thing, that their riches are even now being corroded and their garments are moth-eaten. There is here to come into our minds this image that they have so much, it's stockpiled so much so that they have gold and silver that is corroding in the closet, if you will. It's not even being used, it's just being hoarded. And they have closets full of clothing, and those articles of clothing are being moth-eaten because they are not being used. They have hoarded up wealth, they have hoarded up possessions, and James is reminding the rich that these possessions and these riches are a futile thing. They're passing away. And you have found this to be true, haven't you, church? That the things of this world are really a futile thing, and they do pass away. We are in a season right now, it seems, my wife and I and our family, where everything in the house is breaking. Have you ever had one of those seasons where, of course, it's not just one thing a month or one thing every few months, it's all at once? The handle off our microwave fell off. The dishwasher had suds coming out of it all over the place. The oven would not turn on. The dryer in the garage is making a horrid noise as if it's just going to catch fire one of these days, you know. Beyond that, my phone was dropped by someone, myself, and cracked. And my daughter also dropped her iPod Touch that she got a while back for, you know, what's that? Our AC isn't quite working properly. All at once, you know, and you stand back and you look at it, and not to mention, we bought a new car a couple years ago, I guess it's been now, and I look at that thing, and there are scratches and dings all over it, because, of course, it's also a jungle gym and not just a car, you know, and I'm looking at all of this, and I go, I grow so tired of things, you know, and it's funny, we ought to have a proper perspective concerning the things of this world. We tend to be so into them, as if accumulating them is what life is all about. But at the moment we accumulate them, are we not also reminded that they're corroding? The moment we bring them home, they begin to degenerate and go to nothing, go to waste. That's true of all of us. But think of the rich, especially the unrighteous rich, who have heaped up a mass of possessions for themselves, but for nothing. They don't even use it. It's just luxury. It's just self-indulgence. And what James says to them is that their hoarded riches, the abundance of their riches, are actually crying out to God and will be used as a testimony against them in the judgment, you see. So you're storing up for yourself. You unrighteous rich, you are hoarding it all for yourself, and you're neglecting to care for the poor. You're stealing and robbing from the poor, and you think that that is what life is all about, but you're just stockpiling for yourself more and more judgment. God sees it. He hears of it. He knows of it. And in the judgment, you'll be accountable for it, is what James is pointing out here. Here's what Calvin has to say on that point. For God has not appointed gold for rust, nor garments for moth. That's not what they're for. But on the contrary, he has designed them as aids and help for human life. They ought to be used for that purpose, to aid and to help human life. Therefore, even spending without benefit is a witness of inhumanity. Did you catch that, church? Spending without benefit is a witness of inhumanity. The rusting of gold and silver will be, as it were, the occasion of inflaming the wrath of God so that it will, like fire, consume them. That is, the unrighteous rich. This pertains to the rich, of course, the unrighteous rich. I think it also applies to us, and we ought to give thought to how it is that we use our possessions. In verse 3, in the second part of it, James also confronts the unrighteous rich by saying, you have laid up treasure in the last days. Here's the irony of it. You have stockpiled treasure for yourselves, but you have done so in the last days. This phrase, the last days, really runs throughout all of the New Testament. Christians are to live with this perpetual mindset that the days are short, that the Lord will bring all things to a consummation, and he will do so perhaps now, perhaps soon. The phrase "the last days" also reminds us that the next thing on God's timeline, on the timeline of redemptive history, is the second coming of Christ and the judgment. That is what is next, according to the New Testament scriptures. And what is James saying here? He is saying it is so foolish for you to stockpile and hoard things. It's foolish for you to do so at any time, but especially given the fact that we are in the last days, that is, the days after the coming of Christ and the work that he accomplished on the cross. Verse 4, "Behold," James says, "look, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you, and the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts." And so the wages that have been hoarded and unjustly taken from the harvesters are said to be crying out to God. I think this is to remind us of the language used way back in the book of Genesis when Cain rose up and killed his brother Abel. What did the blood of Abel do, according to the scriptures, metaphorically speaking? It cried out from the ground to God. In other words, the point being made here is that God sees, God hears, God knows what it is that we are doing. God sees the oppression of the poor. He is very much aware of it, a point we'll return to in just a moment. And then in verse 5, "You have lived on the earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter." The word luxury means to live with intemperate fasting and drinking, to revel, to carouse, to live a life of luxury, just to live an outrageous lifestyle, one where you are constantly feasting and partying and spending money on things that are not necessary. It's a wasteful and indulgent sort of lifestyle that James is confronting here. Self-indulgence refers to one who excessively satisfies his own appetites and desires. To live indulgently here is the word being used. And James says, "You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter." My brother-in-law has been trying to get Lindsay and I to go in on purchasing a grass-fed steer from Anza. He's probably looking for a partner still because we're not ready to do that thing. But he wants to eat organic grass-fed beef for his health, and so he's been asking us to do that very thing. So if you're interested in doing that with him, come and talk to me. But the point is this: I let my imagination get away from me the other day when he was talking about that, and I started to think to myself, there is a cow in Anza right now feasting on beautiful grass, thinking that this is the life. My goodness, has any cow ever feasted the way that I am feasting now? You know, not knowing that on August the 15th, his life will come to an end. Her life will come to an end, you see. I know it's kind of a gruesome image, and some of you are angry for me for even bringing that up, but think of it. There is that cow, that dumb animal, relatively dumb animal, feasting on the most beautiful and green grass, enjoying life. And there is that animal getting fatter and fatter and fatter, not knowing that all of it is leading to and is in preparation for the day of slaughter. That is the image that James wants us to have in our minds as we think about all of this. You rich, you unrighteous rich, how foolish and dumb and stupid are you that you would live in such luxury and self-indulgence? It's like you're fattening up your heart, but you don't realize that a day of reckoning is coming, a day of judgment is on the way. It's right around the corner. Either the consummation of all things or your own death and your own standing before the God who made you, you see. And so James, in very graphic imagery, confronts the unrighteous rich for their excessiveness and for their oppression of the poor. He says, "You have condemned and murdered the righteous person. You are so unjust." And he does not resist you. He does not resist you either because he is not willing to resist you, but more likely because he's not able to resist you. He is poor and does not have the means to resist you, and you take advantage of him. Church, I think though we might not be unrighteous rich, there is a powerful message for us here, isn't there? As we listen to James lambast the unrighteous rich, as we witness that, are we not reminded that we had better take care to have nothing to do with that sort of way of life? The temptation here to read James 5, 1 through 6 is to say, well, this doesn't have anything to do with me. I am not a wealthy landowner taking advantage of my poor servants who are mowing my fields. Well, no, you may not be that, but it may be that you are taking advantage of others in other ways. It's not hard to imagine how opportunities to do so might arise. Do you have employees? Some of you are small business owners. I think application here is that you ought to take care to be fair with your employees, to pay them on time and what you have agreed to pay them, and to pay them a fair wage, being mindful of how difficult it can be to make very little and to live paycheck to paycheck, as these workers likely were. Are you in a position of authority where perhaps the opportunity to take advantage of others or of a system might arise? You see, you think, well, never, but maybe you are. I read in USA Today of a group of, I say, half a dozen police officers in Philadelphia's narcotic field unit who are being prosecuted for taking advantage of the poor and of criminals and making quite a bit of money off of it. They are being indicted and charged with robbery, extortion, kidnapping, and drug dealing themselves. I hesitate to even bring this up because I have such a high respect for police officers, and we have some in our midst here, and I know that many of them are honorable and most of them are just. But you see, because of the position of authority that these men were in, you can almost imagine this playing out, right? Here they are as young men, 20 years old, you know, being sworn in as an officer and probably full of integrity with righteous intent, you know. And then you look at these men and their pictures now as they're in their 50s and maybe 60s and they're just hardened. What happened to them? Except that here they were going about their rather common jobs, and then one day an opportunity came about where they could make a little extra cash on the side to supplement the family's income. And they stepped into that world. And I would imagine that over time, the opportunities just grew and they found themselves in such a mess. You see, church, I think though we are not rich, perhaps, landowners, it may be that given our position of authority, we find ourselves having the opportunity to take advantage of the weak and the needy and the gullible, you see. And what we must take care never to go down that road or to do that very thing. And then we might even mention the way that we feed systems of oppression or injustice in an indirect sort of way. This takes a lot of thoughtfulness and care, doesn't it, church? But have you ever thought about the things that you purchase? The things that you spend your money on? And have you ever asked the question, what is behind all of that? What is going on in the world behind this thing that I am purchasing? I think as Christians, it is right for us to give some thought to that and to investigate and to wonder, am I feeding systems of injustice or oppression in the world? Furthermore, we might ask the question, am I living in luxury and self-indulgence? Am I living a luxurious and self-indulgent sort of life? I look at my own life and I don't consider myself rich at all. But at the same time, I can see certain things, certain spending habits that I involve myself in where I go, you know, it may be that that money can be better used elsewhere, that it can be given away to someone who is truly struggling and fighting for the sustenance of life. Maybe I can change my spending habits in this area or that a little bit so as to not be guilty of this sort of thing at all. I'm not stockpiling gold and I don't have walk-in closets full of fine clothing. But perhaps there is this tendency even in my own life. We could ask ourselves the question, are we concerned to share with those who are poor around us? Children, I think these things can even be applied though you are young. I want you to think about this just for a moment, kids, those of you who are of school age. When you go to school, you have an opportunity there each and every day to care for those who are around you, to be kind to them, to look out for those who maybe are being picked on, who are being mistreated or teased, you see. And so even now as Christians, though you might only be 5, 6, 7, or 8, or 11 or 12, you have the opportunity to begin to think and to live this way, even at school as you go, to say, you know what, I'm going to be the kind of person who doesn't look out for myself only, my own reputation, my own pleasure, people liking me, but I'm going to look out for those around me who might be in need. That kid in class who gets picked on all the time, I'm going to be a friend to that person. I'm going to care for him. I'm going to stand up for him and protect him. You see, children, I think this starts now for you. When you get older, it'll happen on a bigger scale. But the point is this, what happens on a global scale happens first on the playground, even at elementary schools. So children, I do believe that you can listen to this and to see what James is saying, that we as Christians should never be the kind of people that oppress others, that push others down, but we should always be the kind of people who act fairly with those who are around us and seek to care for those who are in need. The second thing I see in this text as we watch James rebuke the unrighteous rich is that we should never envy the wicked who prosper. We should never envy the wicked who prosper. Maybe it's not that you've never been tempted to oppress anybody. You think to yourself, I'll never be in a position where I'll even have the opportunity to do it. It's not in my nature. Maybe that is true. But I would guess that many of us do struggle with this issue of envy. We look around and we see so-and-so driving the really nice car, you know, living in the really nice and big house, wearing the really nice clothing, going out to dinner every night, it seems, and spending lots of money. It is tempting as a Christian, as we try to live and walk with integrity, to look at that and to go, boy, if only I had that, you know, I'd be satisfied inside. If only I could get that. If only I could lay a hold of that. You know, we were up in Mammoth this past week, and there's one house in particular that just blows my mind every time we go up there. I mean, it is set back in a wilderness kind of setting, and it is perched up upon this massive rock. It's a huge mansion, and it looks over the whole Mammoth area down into the Owens Valley, has the Sierra Nevada mountain range in the backyard. I mean, it is just unreal looking at this thing. And I'll be honest with you, there are times where I look at that and go, that would be nice, you know. That would be pretty cool to live there. I love this area. I love that view. That's a nice home. And you know what? If we're not careful Christians, though, our hearts can be overrun with this thing called envy. And all of a sudden, we find that we don't have any joy. We don't have any thankfulness in our hearts. We're walking around always feeling sorry for ourselves, wishing that we had more and more and more. You see, and envy has this way of sapping the life out of us, taking joy from us. And we must fight against that tendency of ours to envy the person who has more than we have. The other issue, of course, is this, that envy is the gateway to all of these sins that we're talking about here. Where does it all start? Well, we begin to envy others. And then when those opportunities to oppress or to take advantage of others arise, we say, sure, I'll do that because I want nothing more than to have those things. I'll do anything. I'll do whatever it takes. You see. And so we must guard the heart in this way. And I think this is what James wants to communicate to us as he rebukes the unrighteous rich. He wants the church to hear it, common people, maybe even very poor people, to hear it so that we might be warned not to even be jealous of what the rich have. Don't envy it. Why? Because look at where it leads. Look at where it leads. There's a day of judgment coming where we will give an account. And it leads to weeping and mourning and howling, according to James here in this chapter. We are instead to work hard to the glory of God, as God has called us, and to take great joy in that. We instead are to spend and save and to give with great wisdom as gleaned from the Scriptures. We're to do all to the glory of God as Christians. And we're to pursue contentment in our hearts always, with thanksgiving. That is the command of Scripture given to us. The third thing I see here in this text is simply this, that it is through James's rebuke of the unrighteous rich that we are reminded that we should not grow weary as we live in a world where the wicked sometimes prosper. That can get tiresome, can it? You look at people just rolling in cash and you know that they're coming about it in unrighteous ways. And in your heart, you can begin to think to yourself, Lord, when are you going to make this right? This is so tiresome. Here I am living paycheck to paycheck. Here I am struggling with debt. And yet, here this man is, here this woman is. They're rolling in it, Lord, but I know how they're getting it, you know. It's not right. And Lord, where are you in all of this? You see, I think this would be the question that most of these Christians would struggle with in the early church. Here they are trying to honor God with their lives, working their tails off in the fields day after day, and yet they don't get the paycheck. And there they go home and they see their wife and their children who are hungry, literally hungry, and poorly clothed. As a Christian, you can begin to lose heart saying, Lord, where are you? Do you not see all of this? Are you not going to act? Are you unable to act? I believe this is the main objective that James has here in this text. To in speaking to the rich, actually speak to the Christian who is struggling in an oppressed situation by saying two things primarily to them. God knows, and God is powerful and can and will act. God knows, and He is not impotent. He is not without power. Look with me at verse 7. This is where the text is going to go. What does James say in bringing all of this to conclusion? We'll deal with this text thoroughly next week. But he says what? Be patient, therefore, brothers. In other words, don't lose heart. Keep pressing on after Christ. Don't be shaken. Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until he receives it the early and the late rains. Do you see how a farmer does this, Christian? The farmer plants the seed and then waits patiently for the fruit of the harvest. So too you, Christian. You're living in this world and you're oppressed and you're struggling. But you know what? The harvest is coming. The fruit is on its way. Don't give up. That's where James goes with all of this. He's saying to the Christians, God knows. God knows. Remember that the wages that were held back from the harvesters, what are those wages doing? They're crying out and they have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. Not only are they crying out, but they have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. God knows. He is not blind. He is not unaware. And then we should notice that the Lord is called the Lord of hosts, which literally means the Lord of armies, based upon a Hebrew word. He is the Lord. He hears. And do not forget that He is the Lord of armies. He is the Lord of power. He is not impotent. He will indeed judge one day and bring all things to a conclusion, making all things right. He will act with justice, is the point that James is making. And so what does this all mean to us? Well, we are to take comfort in the Lord as we struggle to live in this life. I'm not sure where each of you are in regard to this. Maybe some of you do feel like you're being oppressed. Certainly, many of you are struggling living paycheck to paycheck, and you feel the burden of that. Maybe some of you are doing well financially, but this text speaks to all of us, doesn't it? To have nothing to do with those unrighteous ways, to never envy those who have many possessions, and certainly we are to take comfort in this fact that the Lord knows, and He can act with power, and indeed will act with power. He is the Lord of hosts. Let's go before the Lord in prayer. Father, I pray that You would make us as Your people very much mindful of this fact that how we handle our possessions, how we handle our money matters to You. In fact, Lord, would You remind us also that the way we spend our money says a lot about the condition of our heart before You. Lord, would You make our hearts pure, that we would not be in love with the things of this world, that we would not lift them up as if they were gods to us, Lord, but that we would be content with the things You have given us in life and that we would keep our eyes fixed upon that which is of supreme value, upon Christ and upon eternity, Lord. I pray for my brothers and sisters in Christ in this time that You would help them with that, Lord, that You would encourage them, strengthen them. Lord, give them the wisdom to put Your word to action in this coming week. And we say these things in Jesus' name. Amen.